Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by SuperValu Insurance, looking out for you and yours with our new life and mortgage protection insurance.
Tweet at Miriam O'Call.
Actor Shannon Murray has several strings to her bow. As well as being an actor, she's a solicitor, a disability rights campaigner, and she grew up around music royalty. Her dad, Frank Murray, was the manager of the Pogues. Shannon Murray, thanks for coming into our studio this morning.
Thanks for having me. It's a joy to be here.
So lovely to see you. Obviously, Frank Murray was your dad, famously manager of the Pogues, also very involved with Thin Lizzy. Tell me about where you grew up. You grew up in England mainly, didn't you, Shannon?
I did. I was born over here and I lived in the Liberties till I was about three, and then mum and dad moved to North London and I grew up in an area called Kilburn, which is very, very Irish. And I mean, that's where I spent, you know, my formative years, but spent a lot of time coming back here to see family and, you know, spent summers and Easters with family over here. So I always felt very connected to Dublin.
Tell me about becoming an actor. Was that something you'd always wanted to do?
Yeah, from a very early age, from about the age of three or four, I used to love recreating the stories and books that I was reading. I wasn't really into performing for the family. I used to just kind of sneak off to my bedroom and then reenact whatever I'd read in a book. And then when I saw people doing it on television, and the first time I went to the theatre and I saw Dana playing Snow White, and I was like, I want to do that. So that was all I wanted to do. And I started drama school with Anna Sher from Cork when I was about eight or nine.
And what did your dad think of it all, being in the music industry? Did he say, no, get a sensible job?
I mean, I think he tried to steer me in a different direction for a while. And when he said I could go to Anna's, it was because he knew Anna's was about acting and that there was also an education there. It wasn't like I was going to come out and, you know, a happy clappy stage school kid. He definitely didn't want that. So I was, you know, I was able to enjoy just going out, going to drama school, doing improvisation. I don't know if he ever thought about me having it as a career until much later. You know, at that point I was still pretty young.
Do you mind taking me back to when you were 14? And what happened to you?
Not at all. So my grandmother, who was from Dublin, in 1982, she moved out to Lanzarote. So we spent every summer out in Lanzarote. And in 1990, I was there on holiday with the family. And one day I went off to the beach, met some friends, and I was diving off the rocks in a little cove. And unfortunately, I dived off a rock into the sea and I couldn't see that there was some large rocks beneath the water. Obviously, Lanzarote's a volcanic island. There are rocks everywhere. And I hit my head and broke my neck and was instantly paralysed in the chest down.
At that moment, who rescued you? I mean, you were still in the water.
Yeah, I was still in the water. I could feel my head stinging. So I knew I had a head injury. And just people on the beach just came rushing in. It was a very small beach that was largely just used by locals. And they carried me out of the sea. And as they were dragging me across the sand, I could see that my legs were being dragged, but I couldn't feel the texture of the sand. And then a second later, I realized I couldn't move my legs. And that was when panic really started to set in.
I mean, I'm looking at you now, and I was lucky I met you a couple of months back as well. You look amazing. You look so healthy and you're a very beautiful woman.
Thank you.
But when something like that happens to you as a young 14-year-old woman, how do you deal with that?
I think in the initial moments, I went deep inside my own head. I think in moments of trauma, there's a part of your subconscious that is there that you can lock away into and retreat in order to keep yourself going. I think it also helped that everybody was speaking Spanish. So I couldn't really understand the things they were saying around me. And I think if I could have understood more, I'd have been freaking out more. And there's a very weird sensation when you hear sirens in the distance and they get closer and then you suddenly realize they're for you. And then progressing from that, I think, you know, having such a brilliant family, a pretty positive family, but also a family with a very dark sense of humour. That helps. And I think I just pushed through. And it's only now when I look back as a woman in my 40s, I can look back and I can see that was a 14-year-old girl that happened to. Whereas in my head, I matured overnight and I was a woman dealing with adult issues. And so it's only on reflection that I can see that I was extraordinarily resilient and that not everybody has that resilience. And also the upside of being 14 is that your life is in such a state of flux and you're still being cared for by your parents. It's not like having a spinal cord injury in your 30s, 40s or 50s where you've got a job and a family to provide for or a house that might not be accessible because it's got, you know, dozens of stairs.
How long did you have to spend in hospital?
I spent 10 months in total in a spinal rehab unit.
Stoke Mandeville.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's a brilliant hospital, isn't
yeah.
it? And then did you go back to your normal school? Like, in other words, when you came out of hospital, you were obviously and are a wheelchair user, but did you go back to your normal school or what did you do?
I wanted to, and they were trying to facilitate that, but it was an old Victorian building in Harley Street. So I remember going back for one day to see, you know, could we make this work? And I realised you can't turn back time. I was forever changed. And to go back to that school and see my friends going off to netball or hockey was not going to feel great. Mm. And I knew that that chapter had firmly closed. So I started the search trying to find an accessible school, which was nearly impossible. Anything accessible was catering for the needs of children with intellectual difficulties. But about 6 months later, somebody put us in touch with a school that had just been renovated. It was completely wheelchair accessible. It was my first time in a mixed sixth form college after going to an all-girls school. 600 students and I was the only wheelchair user. So it was a bit of an intimidating first week.
Did you find also, we were talking earlier in the programme to Darren, and a lot of people are afraid to come up to him and mention his baby son and what happened to him and his wife. Did you find when you had your accident that a lot of people who knew you or even your friends, they didn't know what to say?
I mean, I've always taken the approach that it's, what's the intention? So how people ask or the words they use. So if somebody gets the vocabulary wrong and says words that I personally wouldn't choose to describe myself or anybody with a disability, if the intention was good, you know, or if it's somebody of a certain generation, that's fine. But if I think there's anything slightly dodgy or shady, then no, I won't stand for it. And I think with my friends, initially, I remember the first time they came to visit me in hospital, some school friends. And looking back now, I can see they were nervous around me and I was still pretty fragile in the bed. But they just seemed so immature to me. And I was dealing with such serious implications that I felt that there was definitely a distance for a year or two. I mean, we're still great friends now, but definitely in that first year, that was a new arena for me to navigate.
I was lucky to interview your dad, actually, shortly before he died. He was a fantastic character, obviously, manager of the Pogues. But you were saying to me earlier that he spoke in that interview about you. They were brokenhearted, your mum and dad, weren't they? Because it's their little girl this has happened to.
Yeah, definitely. But they were such a strong support unit for me. And I never felt like there was going to be a ceiling on my abilities or what I wanted to do. I think, you know, instinctively, I felt like I wasn't going to be able to progress with an acting career. So that's why I chose to study law. And then I always knew that if I was going to do this, I still wanted to work in entertainment. So specialise in entertainment law. But the acting bug never went away. And thankfully, the acting jobs have increased significantly over the last 10 years. But before he died, occasionally we'd butt heads because I'd want to, you know, throw everything out the window and quit law and just do acting. And I think he was always worried about me not having security because obviously for him working in the record business, he knew what it was like. So that particular interview, I can remember him texting me on the day and he was like, have you listened to it yet? Have you listened to it yet? And I was like, yeah, I'll get to it later. And I couldn't understand why he was being so pushy. And I've still got those texts. And when I did listen to it, I was just, you know, I was in tears because it was the first time that he'd mentioned me and he was being so supportive of my acting and of all the campaigning I'd done about the representation of disability in the media. And it was just, it was really special. So I'm grateful for being able to hear that.
You also did modelling, as you say, and you have become and became a major spokesperson for disability rights. How is Ireland? How are we in this country? Have we got anything right? Have we got some things right? Have we a long way to go?
I think some things are right, but I would say structurally there's a long way to go. I think because I was always flying back and forth and always here for short trips, I wasn't seeing everything as much as I have been living here recently. And yeah, there's definitely a long way to go. I mean, a couple of examples, things like access aisles, which are the crisscross stripes you see next to a disabled parking spot. Mm. You know, people regularly park in those spots or park a scooter in them. Now, they're there for a wheelchair user to be able to open a door fully. So if I can't open my door, what's the point of the disabled parking bay? Or for some reason, a lot of the cinemas here have the wheelchair seat in the front row. I mean, who wants to sit in the front row of the cinema? Yeah, exactly. I don't want to sit there with my neck cricked. So, you know, it's little things, but there are still a lot of buildings here that I can't get into because there are so many Georgian townhouses.
You must have had a lot of fun when you were younger, though, with all the people your dad worked with. Was it just normal to you that, you know, big famous stars were around a lot?
Yeah. And I think, I mean, that might have been what led me to wanting to work in the entertainment industry because that was home. That was what I knew. Me and my brothers joke about the fact that, you know, we'd get up for school and you never knew who was going to be asleep on the living room floor with like a spare bed. And you'd be tripping over people trying to get your school uniform or going downstairs and there'd be like three guitars blocking the hallway. You didn't know what it was going to be. And then, the fun things like going to loads of gigs, less excited when I'd be finishing school and he'd pick me up and then I'd be dragged off to a Pogue soundcheck, which I know to a lot of people would be amazing, but to a 12-year-old girl, it just really wasn't the height of excitement.
There's nice connections as well. Bruce Shields obviously was a friend of your dad's, very
That's
involved
right.
with him. And when you had your accident, like they all rode in because he suggested you go and see Sean Boylan, the great herbalist. And you still go to see Sean?
I do. I've been seeing Sean for 34 years.
Wow.
And he is one of my closest, dearest friends. Mm. And yeah, I would say it must have been about 10 months after my accident when Brush got in touch and suggested I start seeing him. And after that first visit, things improved for me significantly. So then I would fly from London to Dublin on day return flights pretty much every 6 weeks for the last 30 years. Yeah, he's very, very dear to me.
Yeah, he's a wonderful man.
Yeah.
You're currently living in Dunmore East, but you're going on an adventure. You're going to go and live in the States because you have two of your brothers are living there. Is that right?
That's right. I've got two brothers in the States and one brother in Dublin. And I'm just going to go off on the next adventure and see what happens.
And into every life, you also were very involved in minding your mom because she got early Alzheimer's, didn't she? And died, I think, was it last?
Late yeah, last so year? Mum was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's in 2013. And we were very fortunate that it was caught so early. She and I were incredibly close and I knew something was off. I just knew something was off and I had to keep pushing to get tests. Mm. And it took about a year and then they finally confirmed the diagnosis was Alzheimer's. We were fortunate because it was so early. So I would say we got 8 great years where she was still completely independent. She was the same person. She would slowly retreat because she was a very outgoing person. I mean, she was just a big ball of light. Dad wouldn't have got to where he did without her, and they were a pretty dynamic couple. So when she started to decline, and I would say 2019, 2020, it was more obvious, but her only wish after diagnosis was that she wanted to get home. So we moved her back here and cared. Me and my brothers cared for her for as long as we could. And then in 21, we had to move her to a nursing home where she had wonderful care. And then she passed away in December. So both her and dad went just before Christmas. So it's either side of my birthday. But, you know, I take comfort from the fact that, you know, every year I get to hear Fairy Tale of New York at Christmas and you know, raise a glass to them.
And of course, your cousin is someone else I know, Shona Murray. I often interview her. She's the Euronews correspondent. And you're close, aren't you?
We are. We're very close. And she's a phenomenal journalist.
Before I let you go, you've done a big acting role lately. You can't really talk about it yet. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I'm just back from filming. But unfortunately, I can't. I know that's such a wind up, isn't it? I've done something really exciting, but I can't tell you about it.
Shannon Murray, thanks so much for coming in to see me today. And that's it for today.